Good day, and welcome to the ESPN Media Conference Call with NFL Draft Analyst Todd McShay. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Allie Stoneberg. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Dory. Good morning, media members. As many of you have already seen, Todd McShay's NFL Mock Draft 3.0 is now available, and you can see him on a variety of shows talking about it today. And I'm grateful he's with us now to answer some questions for all of us. So two reminders before we start. First off, in addition to Todd's regular appearances today, he and fellow ESPN NFL draft analyst Mel Kiper will be part of a SportsCenter special, and that's at 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2, and they'll have more on his Mock 3.0. So please look for that. And then second, just a reminder to make this call as efficient and content-packed as we can. Please skip any personal greetings and begin right away with your question. We'll start off with Kareem Copeland at the Washington Post, followed by Arnie Stapleton with the Associated Press.
Hey, Todd. With so much talk with the Redskins as far as quarterback and edge rusher, you go Marquise Brown. What went into your considerations to have him go right there?
I think they need a wide receiver. I had the three quarterbacks already off the board, which, again, is a possibility. It's going to be interesting to see which teams try to move around to go get a quarterback. I think if Drew Lock was there, I would have given him Drew Lock, given the Redskins Drew Lock, but I gave him to the Dolphins at 13. So at that point, it came down to best player available, and I think they need a slot receiver. They need a guy that can help stretch the field, and Marquise Brown is – I know he didn't work out at the combine. I know he's dealing with an injury. I know he's only 166 pounds, but I don't know that I've ever evaluated a faster – more explosive player at that position than Marquise Brown. Reminds me a lot of DeSean Jackson, and that's the kind of player that he can be. And I just thought it was a fit. I considered Cleveland Farrell from Clemson there. He wound up going one pick later to Carolina, but I thought at that point that Marquise was a little bit of a better fit and just a better value.
We'll go to Arnie Stapleton and then Ryan Dunleavy with NewJersey.com.
Hey, Todd, I know some of the bigger wide receivers usually skip the agility drills at the end of the combine. DK Metcalf put up some concerning numbers in the three cone and the short shuttle. I'm wondering, in your view, what does that mean in, as far as him being able to run the full route tree in the pros, and if that portends any concern about his hip flexibility?
Yeah, but that definitely is. I mean, you have to know what you're getting with DK, and I think it's very obvious what he does best. I mean, he runs the nine route and goes up and makes plays on the ball and vertically as well as anyone in this class. And when you're 6'3", and basically 6'3 and a half, 228 pounds, there's going to be a little bit of tightness. Now, for him specifically, I think it's something he's going to have to work on. I mean, it's just obvious looking at him how chiseled he is and how into, you know, strength and weightlifting and everything else that he is, that I think a little bit he'll probably get with the team that they take a look at him and say, you know what, we got to start working on more of the flexibility and getting you to be a little bit more flexible and worry a little bit less about the strength component of it. You know, if you're going to break down for like 3 hours of working out in a day, they're probably going to try to get him to take at least an hour of that time and work on flexibility and change of direction and those sorts of things. 7.38, you're right. It's not a great time in the three cone. 4.50 is a concerning time in the short shuttle. So those are issues. I'm glad you pointed them out because I think it's been glossed over because it's 3.5, 228. He ran a 4.33, and he had 27 on the bench, and he had a 40.5-inch vertical, and he had a great broad jump as well, 134-inch broad jump. So when you look at those numbers, it's easy to get caught up in them, but I do think that aspect of his game will have to improve in order for him to become a more complete receiver in the NFL.
We'll go to Ryan Dunleavy with Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted here. We'll go to Ryan Dunleavy, followed by Mark Gaughan with the Buffalo News.
Hey, Todd. I'm just wondering here. I'm looking at the Giants and six. How realistic is it really that Haskins falls to six, or will they have to trade up? And what is there something that prevents you from doing trades? Is this realistic for the Giants to get him at six?
It's a great question, man. It really is. I think it's really kind of outside of the Cardinals for real about Kyler Murray or not. I think that becomes the next biggest question in this entire class, because I sit there and I look, and Arizona on paper doesn't have a quarterback need. You know, they've got Josh Rosen in-house. They used the 10th overall pick on him a year ago. If they decide to go that route because of Cliff Kingsbury and the fit, I get it. But to the point, really the Cardinals, 49ers, Jets, and Raiders, and Buccaneers at five presumably don't have a glaring need at that quarterback position. And so you get down to six. But the problem is, you look behind you, and Denver, I don't know if Denver's going to want to moving up after, making the deal for Flacco or not. The Bengals at 11, I don't know if they're going to try to move up either. They've got Andy Dalton, but they clearly at some point are going to need an upgrade over Dalton at that position. But the Dolphins at 13, the Redskins at 15, those are two teams that would scare me if I'm the Giants. So, and we've seen in recent years, I mean, look at how far Kansas City moved up to go get Pat Mahomes. Look at what the Eagles did, how much they gave away to go up and get their quarterback in Carson Wentz. Look at what Houston did, how far they had to move up to go get Deshaun Watson. Teams, if they target a guy and say he's the guy, it really doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, no one's looking at Howie Roseman saying, why'd you give up so much? No one's looking at the Texans and saying, why'd you give up so much? Or certainly not the Chiefs with Mahomes. So I think we're going to see movement. If you're the Giants, you're really in a tough spot because you're sitting there saying, you know, one of these guys could fall to us. And if we wait till draft day, all of a sudden they could jump. Two teams could jump us and go get them. So it's going to be interesting to see that chess match. And it really comes down to this: do the Giants and their organization fall in love with one of these guys? Now, if they really like two and think that they can be fine with two or three, then I don't think you move and you stay pat at six. If they just like one and think he's the guy and are convinced of it, then I would personally give up a lot to go up and make sure that I get my guy.
We'll go to Mark Gaughan and then Philip Heelman with the Florida Times Union.
Yes, Todd. Mel seems to like Jonah Williams better at guard. Where do you stand on Jonah Williams' best position? And what are you hearing after the combine on the reaction to Tyree Jackson and him?
Jonah, to me, I think he can play tackle. I really do. It may be right tackle where he played earlier in his career. But I think he can play tackle. There are a lot of guys in the league that have had success, and you can do a quick Google search to find them, that have had arms that are not ideal. And his arms are 33 and a half, almost close to 34. I mean, really, if you want to round up, it's close to 34, but it's 33 and 0.6. And that's, typically, you want your offensive tackle to have 34-inch arms. Now, what's the difference in a half of an inch, less than half of an inch? It's not huge. It can come into play. It can affect them at certain points. And the reason is you want your offensive tackle to be able to use the long arms to initiate contact before the defensive lineman is able to get into his body. Now, if the defensive lineman has 35, 36-inch arms, he's got a better chance of getting into your body before you can get into his. And it helps to take speed rushers and pass them wide and all those sorts of things. At the end of the day, though, Jonah has played tackle at a high level for 3 years. He's played right on the right side, finished up on the left side at Alabama. And I think he can play tackle. Maybe it's on the right. If he wants to move into guard, I think he'd be a great guard, too. So at the end of the day, I think Jonah Williams, while we're going to beat it to death about the arm length and tackles and all that stuff, there are plenty of examples of guys that have had success in the NFL at a very high level with shorter arms. And I know he wants to play tackle. I know that was an issue at Alabama. They wanted to move him to center, and he didn't want to do it. So at the end of the day, I think he's going to do everything he can to play that tackle position, and I think he'll be just fine. I think he'll be a great guard if he winds up moving inside. Tyree Jackson. Tyree Jackson is the other question. He's 6'7", he's 250 pounds, he runs well, he ran 4.59, I think he's the fastest of all the, or second fastest of all the quarterbacks behind McSorley. He's clearly a good athlete for his size. He has mechanical issues that have to be worked out. He's working on them, he's trying to shorten that delivery a little bit. He's never really had a quarterback coach before now, and in high school, he basically started his career at the high school that had terrible talent around him and went on to win a championship. At Buffalo, they were not a very good program. A couple of years later with him as a starter, they're going and playing in bowl games and turn things around. So he's a proven winner. He's a guy that didn't go through all the quarterback camps and has not been worked that way. And so he's not a finished product, and that's intriguing. You got a guy with that size, and I know that 6'7" is almost a negative at this point because there's not many guys that have had success at 6'7" in the NFL, but he's intriguing because he can move the way he moves, and he was a 3.9 in school. This guy is bright. He picks things up quickly. There's just a lot to like about him. I think he's going to wind up coming off the board a little bit earlier than people think. I think at the latest, probably, I'll say fourth round. I'd be surprised if he got past the fourth round. Let's put it that way.
We'll go to Philip Heelman and then Brian Costello with the New York Post.
Hey, Todd, curious at all if you consider T.J. Hawkinson to the Jaguars at number 7, and if they do go Jawan Taylor and offensive line, who are some tight ends in the latter rounds who could be a good fit for them?
Can you say the first part again, Saul?
I was just curious if you considered T.J. Hawkinson to the Jags at all at 7, or if that was too high, and then if they do take an offensive
line
in the first round, sort of,
for
some later tight ends.
So I did consider it at 7. I definitely did. I understand it's a need. If they bring in Foles, I think wide receiver and tight end are a couple of needs that they have. Hawkinson, if you look at his workout, everyone got caught up in the 4.7, I think, was the final result. He's just a darn good football player is what he is. He plays his tail off. He's gotten better each year. If you talk to the Farrington's at Iowa, they'll rave about him, and you'll understand just how hard he's worked to get to where he is. And I think at 6'4.5", 251, running 4.7 is not bad. It's better than the combine average, which is 4.75. And the rest of his stuff was good. He had a 30-inch vertical, basically. 38-inch vertical. He had over 10 feet in the broad jump. He had a nice time, 7.02 in the three cone. 4.18 is outstanding in the short shuttle. 4.41 in the short shuttle is the average at the combine for tight ends. And he had a 4.18. So he has that short area quickness, body control, change of direction, and all those sorts of things. So long short, I considered him there. He didn't go much further down the board. I had him go 12 to the Packers. I think he's the most complete and best tight end. I know other guys, like Noah Fant's teammate, ran faster at 4.50, but Hawkinson is a better player. And so if you don't get a tight end there, start talking about the second round. I think Fant and maybe Irv Smith will wind up coming off the board in the first round. It could be one of, I think Smith could wind up available early in the second round. And then you get to later in day two, you've got Tommy Sweeney, who doesn't have great speed out of Boston College, but he's a sure-handed, tough guy who's going to block and do all the things that you need him to do. Dawson Knox is talented and has upside coming out of Ole Miss. Jace Sternberger from Texas A&M is another guy who has some athleticism. So there's some depth to this year's class, and it's a little bit better than most years.
We'll go to Brian Costello and then Bob McManaman with the Arizona Republic.
Todd, if it plays out like you laid out this morning, 1-2 with Murray and Bosa going there, could you just break down the decision the Jets would have at 3 between Williams and Josh Allen?
Yeah, that was a tough one for me because I look at it in tiers almost in terms of talent. And I think this year it's Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams are kind of that top elite, elite tier. Then Josh Allen is right behind him and basically in his own next tier. I just think there's a little bit of a difference between the first two and Allen. And so I realize and recognize that the Jets would prefer, I would think, an edge rusher. It's been an issue for a while now. But I had a hard time passing on Quinnen Williams there when he had the opportunity. And listen, if Quinnen doesn't go three to the Jets, he's going to go very likely four to the Raiders. So to me, it was kind of splitting hairs a little bit, but I went with the better player over what probably for the Jets would be a slightly bigger need. That's kind of what went into it.
We'll go to Bob McManaman and then Matt Kawahara with the San Francisco Chronicle.
Todd, two quick ones. What sold you on Murray at number one, and the Cardinals are looking for offensive line help at tackle and guard? Who do you see maybe there for them at the top of the second? Guys that either slide or maybe a sleeper? What are your best options? What are their best options there at lineman?
Well, to be, you know, completely candid with you, I'm not completely sold on Kyler Murray there, but these are based off of what you're hearing, and I reached out to people that I thought would even, you know, text back or respond back in a negative manner, thinking, no, there's no way the Cardinals are going to do that. And even the most cynical guys that I've talked to, they are hearing the same things. So I don't know. My gut tells me Arizona, I mean, it would be the worst-kept secret in combine history. And all the different leaks and all the different rumors that everyone seems to be hearing, my gut tells me that they're putting it out there to kind of drum up some interest in that first pick and get a team to show their cards and try to move up and get a good deal out of them to move back a few spots or how many ever spots it is. But then you got to look at the reality of it, too. Do they want to move out of one where they could get, even if it's not Kyler Murray, let's say they stay with Rosen, do they want to move away from getting a Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams and move all the way down to six, which is still could get a really good player, or move all the way down the next spot then becomes, I mean, is it 13 or 15? That's a huge drop-off. So you'd have to get enormous compensation in order to do that. So, again, I'm not sold on it, but if I'm going based off of what I heard and all the information that people I've talked to, not with Arizona, because if I ask them, they're just going to, you know, tell me to beat it, but around the league of guys that think they have some kind of understanding or feel for what they want to do, that's what Kyler Murray seemed to be the consensus for guys that I talked to. Now, offensive lineman, second round, I think Juwan Taylor, Andre Dillard from Washington State, Taylor from Florida, and Jonah Williams from Alabama are locks to go in the first round. I think Cody Ford is very likely coming out of Oklahoma. After that, I think there's a drop-off. But I do think Caleb McGarry in day two is a good player coming out of Washington. Greg Little has excellent athleticism. Is he going to be able to maximize his potential is the big question. He is not to this point. He's got to get stronger, more aggressive, more physical. And then I think you kind of get into the later rounds there at the tackle position. Guard to me is a little bit deeper. It's a really good class, and I think you can, in the second, third, fourth round, go get some good players. Saw Chris Lindstrom from Boston College have a great overall combine. He's been a very productive, steady player for BC. Drew Samia and Ben Powers, both from Oklahoma, I think are day two picks and quality players, tough guys. Connor McGovern from Penn State has talent as a third rounder. Bo Benchwall from Wisconsin is another one. Nate Davis from Charlotte is a smaller school guy that has a lot of ability. So there's good depth in this year's offensive line class when you get into that second, third, fourth round range.
Next up is Matt Kawahara, followed by Jory Epstein with USA Today.
Hi, Todd. With the Raiders, John Gruden has at least mention the possibility of considering trying to move up from that number four selection in the first round. Just wondering what you think the chances of that are, who they would consider moving up for, and then also what you like about Paris Campbell there at the end of the first round to the Raiders.
Well, I'll be interested to see if Oakland's one of the teams in the mix for Antonio Bryant. I think that would make sense. They need a vertical weapon. They need a guy that can come in, and I don't think John Gruden, I don't know if Gruden would be or not. I'm not going to speak for him, but history says that he can handle that kind of personality. So that would be a possibility, and my guess is it would cost them, you know, either 24 or 27. When you look at where they are at four, I personally think they have so many needs. That, and I've never been a huge Derek Carr guy. I think I've obviously recognized the talent, and he can be successful when he has the pieces around him. He's proven that. But I think he deserves a second year. And if they believe that, then I think now you move forward. At least you have your quarterback, and that's kind of the mindset. So if picks 4, 24, and 27, now I've got an opportunity to find a pass rusher that we desperately need. You know, sitting there, if Josh Allen falls to them, I think that would be ideal. Now they've got a guy off the edge. Quinnen Williams there, they get probably the second best player at the fourth overall pick. So I think you get a potential for one of those top three guys to fall to at number four. You're rooting for Kyler Murray to go one if that's not the guy that you want to go get. And then you've got picks 24 and 27, plus don't forget two first-rounders next year as well. So five first-round picks in a two-year span to address the edge rusher, wide receiver, cornerback, safety, all the different areas of need that they have on this football team. And as far as Paris is concerned, I like his tape. I thought he was more of a second rounder. When you run and put up the numbers that he did, it's going to elevate your stock. And I listen, some positions to me, we overvalue the speed and some of the results in the shuttles and jumps and those sorts of things. Wide receiver and cornerback, it's not, you know, typically there's value there. And I think with Paris, he showed that he's explosive. He's got the ability. I thought in the route running, he looked really good. And I was wondering, because coming out of that system, they don't run a ton of different routes. It's a lot of speed outs and screens and occasionally some nine routes and crossers and those sorts of things. But at almost 6 foot, 205 pounds, the guy comes out and runs a 4.31 in the 40. And he had a 40-inch vertical. He had a big broad jump, 135 inches, and then ran a 4.03, which is outstanding in the short shuttle. So everything you wanted to see from him, he showed, and he caught the ball really well as well. So I think he's really helped himself, and I think there's a strong chance that he winds up in the first round somewhere.
We'll go to Jory Epstein and then Ray Fittipaldo with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Todd, you mentioned on one of these calls last year that 28, 29, even 30 teams had reached out to Lincoln Riley with NFL interest. Now that you'd be projecting he'd have a second overall pick or second first overall pick in a row, where do you see that interest and do you think it's on those sides?
For Lincoln Riley, I don't remember saying that specific number. I just know that a lot of teams have reached out to him, and I asked him about it. And he said he kind of acknowledged that teams have talked to him and that, you know, if he ever were to make that move, it would be, you know, based a lot on you'd have to have a quarterback to succeed in the league. And he didn't tie one thing to the other, but when you're talking about quarterbacks and different things, the NFL draft that, you know, that I was curious about, and he said, you know, you got to have a guy, which everyone knows. I think he could get a job. I haven't specifically asked him, you know, what intention he ever has or anything like that. But my guess is, just knowing how coaches are, he knows that he can get a job. He understands it would have to be the right job. It would have to be the right quarterback and situation there. He would have to have the right amount of responsibility. And ownership would have to be the right situation as well. Because he understands that he's probably the hottest name of all college football in terms of guys that could go to the NFL. So I think he wants to probably win a championship at Oklahoma. I think he's, you know, it's unfinished business at this point. It's hard to have much more success than he has had in the last 2 years. But my guess is he wants to win a championship and kind of cement his legacy before he moves on. But I honestly don't know. You'd have to ask him.
We'll go to Ray Fittipaldo and then Rich Cimini with ESPN New York.
Todd, what's the likelihood of Bush or White being there for the Steelers at 20? And if not, are there any three down linebackers that might be available in the second or third round who just might need a year or two of development before they get to that point?
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if Devin White was available there. There's a chance with Devin Bush. I think White is just a little bit more of a complete player, but not by much, man. I mean, Devin Bush, you watch the tape, and he's so instinctive. He's a really good leader. He obviously has great speed. And the workouts that those two put up, pretty remarkable. You don't often see guys that are in the 230-pound range. I remember, I think it was like Jonathan Zolma, that class. There were a couple guys that ran in the 4.5s. And I was like, whoa, you know, a 230-something-pound linebacker running the 4.5s. And now you get Devin Bush at 5'11", 234 pounds, running a 4.43, and it wasn't even the fastest time of the group. And he also had 40.5-inch vertical jump, over 10-foot broad jump, 6.93 in the three-cone. I mean, all of his numbers were ridiculous. And so I think that hurts the Steelers in terms of him possibly getting there. I did have him going there. The thing that does help is there's so many defensive players, and you got the quarterbacks that will help bump some players down. But while I gave it to him, I think that's probably the parachute pick, if you will. That's as far as he's probably going to get. After that, there is a little bit of a drop-off, but there are good players. Mack Wilson from Alabama is an option. Trey Lamar from Clemson is a good player who's still developing, but he's got size. He's got straight-line speed. Drew Tranquil from Notre Dame is probably more in the third, fourth round range. So there's some depth behind them. Ben Burke-Turvin is a good day three option as well. But there's those two guys are special. They're different than the rest of the group.
Next up is Rich Cimini and then Jim Wyatt with Titans Online.
Hey, Todd, for the first time in a long time, the Jets are not in the quarterback market, which leads me to my question, which is a little outside the box, but it was about this time a year ago that the Jets made the big trade with the Colts, you know, giving up the 3-2s to move up and eventually take Darnold. I'm wondering, a year later, who got the best of it? Who got the best of the trade, in your opinion?
I'd have to really go study what they got with those three picks. I think the Colts were very happy with it. But I'd love Sam Darnold, and I think he's going to be a really, really good quarterback for them if they can start putting enough pieces around him. And anytime you can get your quarterback, you did the right thing, in my opinion. I mean, it's cut and dry as far as I'm concerned. And I think the Jets, you'll be hard pressed to find someone in that building that wouldn't go back and do it again. And I think when that's the case a year later, and hopefully 3-4 years later, then it doesn't matter whether the other team had a great pull from what you gave in terms of picks. As long as you got what you needed and it was at that quarterback position, it really doesn't matter what you gave up. I truly believe that.
Jim Wyatt is next, and then Bill Bender with Sporting News.
Todd, I noticed you zeroed in on Garrett Bradbury for the Titans at number 19. Can you talk through that pick and who else could potentially slide there that would make them think real hard?
Yeah, I mean, they were a tough one. Bradbury, to me, is clearly the best interior offensive lineman in this class. And, you know, you look at it, and I just think if you can get a player of his quality there, and know that you've got a plug-and-play starter for the next 8, 9, 10 years, you got to feel pretty good about it. Plus the fact you want to protect your quarterback, and they've got to continue to be able to run the football, and they've got to continue to try to upgrade that offensive line in order to keep Marcus upright and you know, take away from the amount of hits that he's taking. So I thought about tight end as a possibility. Delanie Walker's 34, ended last season, but he, you know, still can play. But, you know, so tight end there, Hockenson was gone at that point, but Noah Fant would be a possibility. Wide receiver is another possibility. Had Metcalf coming off the board earlier. So did Marquise Brown from Oklahoma. So they were gone at that point as well. But when I look at the Titans, and I realize, and I think I wrote it in the blurb, but Ben Jones is obviously playing at a pretty high level at center. He's played at guard, started at guard as well, so they could move him over. And if it wasn't Bradbury, I think wide receiver would be a possibility. They need another edge rusher. Offensive guard, any of the guys that are in the first round would make some sense, but I just think he kind of fits what they want to do. And then tight end, as I mentioned as well.
Next up is Bill Bender, and then Teddy Greenstein with the Chicago Tribune.
Hey, Todd, you've obviously evaluated Big Ten quarterbacks, and several have been kind of close to the first round. This guy, Dwayne, obviously is in line to break that streak, so to speak. So how big is that for the conference, and will it change maybe, I guess, the way they recruit and develop quarterbacks, him being kind of the standard for a lot to follow?
Yeah, it's, you know, I've read some of the numbers and how long it's been first round and all of that, and it's surprising. I, you know, just remember growing up with all the Michigan quarterbacks and, just, you know, Illinois, and obviously you've got Drew Brees and so on and so forth. So it kind of, when I read that, I think it was during the season at some point, which surprised me. So I don't know if it, I don't, I, again, because I was surprised, I don't think it doesn't seem to be like a stigma out there. You know, if you play quarterback at a high level, you don't want to go to a Big Ten school. It seems like it's kind of been coincidence. But the quarterbacks are coming from everywhere. I mean, it's not just the USCs anymore and big time schools down south or out in California. North Dakota State is producing one every year, it seems like. You know, the small school level. We got a guy from Buffalo this year. So it's not like one school has been a factory. And to be honest, the USC, if you go back and look at the history, it's been up and down in terms of what they have produced compared to where those players were taken. So I don't know that it's a big thing for the conference. It certainly doesn't hurt. And it certainly won't hurt Ohio State because Ryan Day has had a big role in developing Haskins and how quickly Haskins got to that high level with only 14 starts. So I think that will help Ohio State, and it can't hurt the conference, but certainly a streak you'd like to break is you start recruiting and trying to bring big-time quarterbacks into that conference.
We'll go to Teddy Greenstein, followed by Paul Schwartz with the New York Post.
Hey, Todd, I'll keep it the theme of Big Ten quarterbacks. Clayton Thorson, where do you see him going, and what does he have to do prior to the draft to try to move up?
You know, I like Clayton. I got an opportunity to meet with him last year. I think he's a smart quarterback. He picks things up quickly. He clearly has the size. Obviously, coming off the injury, I don't think he was ever really 100% this past year. I think he throws with anticipation. I think if you get him like in a rhythm, that he can be very successful. He has a solid arm, not a great arm. He's got some movement in the pocket. He's not, you know, an elite athlete by any stretch. But I think what's going to happen with Clayton and what has to happen for him, to answer your question, is he's got to really, as many people that he can get in front of, as many teams that he can get up on the board, and as many times as he has opportunities to go out and sell himself and turn to private meetings, I think he's got to take advantage of that. Because, you know, when I left the room after spending time with him, I was impressed with the way he carries himself and his football knowledge. Brian Greasy, who I work with, was as well. And Brian's a tough one to sell on those things because he's one of the smarter quarterbacks I've ever been around. So I think Clayton's going to help himself in that regard. Is it the fourth round, fifth round? I don't know. I think he's probably going to be a day three pick, but I also won't be surprised 5 years from now if we look and he's a backup somewhere and maybe pushing to develop into a starter in the NFL. I'm not drafting him to be a starter. I'm drafting him to be a really good backup, and if we strike gold, great. But it won't shock me if one day, if he kind of defeats the odds as a fourth, fifth round pick and winds up starting a few games here or there or starting a season.
Paul Schwartz is up, and then we'll go to Joe Fan with the San Francisco 49ers.
Hi, Todd. I see you with Haskins at number six to the Giants. Do you think it makes sense to, with the sixth pick, just have a guy come in and play right away or stash him for a year behind Eli Manning? And also, where would you rank Haskins if he was in last year's draft class?
If I'm the Giants, here's my mindset. We're not picking up in the top six again for a long time. We've got one of the special running backs in the NFL. We nailed last year's pick. You can say we should have taken a quarterback all you want, but we nailed it. And now if we're not going to pick this high again, we better take advantage if we have the opportunity and maybe even, you know, package a pick and try to move up a little bit to secure it if we really like Dwayne Haskins. I can't speak to the organization. I'm just saying if I like Haskins and I want him to be our guy, I would go and make that happen. So if you're not going to pick it in the top six again for the next several years, then you've got to take advantage of being up here. Now, with Haskins specifically, I would have him fifth behind the top four of last year, but it would be close with Rosen. But, you know, Rosen, the only thing with Rosen is the durability aspect. But Rosen is a pocket passer, is even more advanced, I think, than Haskins is. And Haskins is pretty advanced in terms of his touch, his anticipation, his timing, and being able to see the field, especially for a guy who only had 14 starts. That's the other thing. With those guys a year ago, you were getting experienced quarterbacks. So if the Giants do bring him in, I think the plan would be don't start him right away. You know, he only had 14 starts. Let him be around Eli. Let him see what Eli, how he prepares for a game, what kind of homework he does, what are the things that he brings from practice or from the film room and the meeting room to practice every day and practice to the game. How does he prepare for opponents in terms of what he's looking for and studying? All of those little things. And then how does he approach day to day? He's got to learn. He's a younger guy coming in, 14 starts. So I think it would be a great experience for Haskins to be around Eli. I don't know that Eli, and I don't know if he would or wouldn't be a great mentor, kind of like Alex Smith was for Mahomes. But even if he was resistant to it and just wasn't helpful, even if Haskins could just see how he prepares and watch him, that would be a benefit to him. Now, if Eli gets injured, if Eli's not playing well, then at some point, do you insert Haskins? Yeah, history's told us if you draft a quarterback in the first round, he's going to wind up starting some games in year one. And I think that would be the case, but I would probably guess that Haskins would wind up being the backup initially, and then they would go on from there.
Joe Fan is next, and then Ryan O'Halloran with the Denver Post.
Just want to circle back to DK Metcalf. What did you make? I know you touched on it briefly, but what did you make of his week in Indy? Where did you have him before? Where do you have him now? And are you buying some of the hype that says he could be a top five pick, potentially number two even with the 49ers?
That's a little rich for my blood, to be honest. I thought I put him as high as I wanted to, probably maybe a little bit higher than I anticipated. The Bills had a need there at wide receiver. And they just, you know, Juwan Taylor had come off the board. You know, I don't know. To me, I see the weaknesses. I really do. I understand that he was kind of a one-trick pony, but it's a hell of a trick. You know, when you can get down the field at 228 and when you can go up and compete for the ball the way he does, track the deep ball, adjust, and make the plays that he did, get off of press, which he did, go study the Alabama tape, his first touchdown, does a great job of getting off press coverage. So he's got that already. Now you got to develop the other parts. And I, like I said, you know, the short shuttle and the three cone were not good numbers and kind of translate to what you see. I thought he ran the routes well during the workout, but he has some tightness. I mean, it's obvious. It's not a secret. And he's got to continue to develop as a short and intermediate route runner in order to get the most out of his potential. But if you can bring in a guy with that kind of arm too, that's the other thing I was thinking was with Josh Allen and the ability that he has to extend plays and then some of the throws that he can make down the field that very few in the league can actually make, a guy like Metcalf could really bring out the best in Josh Allen.
We'll go to Ryan O'Halloran and then Donald Hunt with the Philadelphia Tribune.
Hey, Todd, a follow-up from Jonah Williams from earlier in the call. What do you like about his tape to say, hey, he could be a pretty effective right tackle in this league?
Well, he's consistent. He's patient in pass protection. You know, he doesn't have the long arms, obviously, but he plays with good balance. He's a natural bender. He's not a guy that's lunging a lot or getting off balance typically. You know, he went up against Cleveland Furl, and he had the one play where he got kind of off balance and got pushed back. But for the most part, I thought he won that one-on-one and did a really good job. And he comes in with starting experience on both sides as well, which is important because not all guys can play both sides. You know, some guys just really are more comfortable in their sets when, you know, going kicking back with their left foot versus their right foot. And so knowing that he can play both sides is a positive. Now, he's been against moving inside to center is what Alabama tried to do, and he wouldn't have it. But I also think that that's a business decision at this point, and he knows he's not an idiot. If you're going to be drafted as a tackle, you're going to probably go higher, and higher means more money. So when he gets in the league, I don't know if that is still an issue, but that's something I would want to uncover and make sure I knew if I had plans to potentially maybe move him inside to guard or center, which I think he'd excel at as well. I think he'd be a great interior offensive lineman. I think he'd be a really good starter at right tackle too.
Donald Hunt is up, and then we'll go to Eric Smith with the Minnesota Vikings.
Todd, how you doing? Give me your thoughts on Sharif Miller from Penn State and where he may go, as well as Nasir Adderley from Delaware.
So Sharif, he had Penn State, I think it was 2 weeks in a row this past year. And so Sharif had a big game. It was Indiana, I want to say. He had a pretty big game as a pass rusher. I think the whole Penn State defense did. But, you know, he's got ability. I think he's still kind of developing a little bit, but you know, you look at this class, and it's obviously loaded with defensive linemen. And so I think he's probably – I've got him right now as a third, fourth, somewhere in that range. Because you look up, and it's like one after another. Nick Bosa, Rashawn Gary, Montez Sweat, who just blew the doors off the combine, Cleveland Furl, L.J. Collier, who's one of the most underrated defensive linemen in the class, Brian Burns, who just had a phenomenal workout, Chase Winovich, productive at Michigan, but and people were questioning, does he have the speed and athleticism? He goes and runs a 4.6. Zach Allen for Boston College. The list just goes on and on and on. So he picked a tough year to be coming out as an early entry, but he's still talented enough. He can get after the quarterback. I think he's probably, my guess, if I had to pin it to a round, would be the fourth round. And then with Adderley, I think Adderley's underrated. I really like that guy. First tape I studied was against my alma mater, Richmond, and he had two interceptions in that game, and one of which was just highlight reel stuff. I mean, he tracked it vertically. He somehow, you know, Willie Mays type style, over the head, just last second, plucks it from the ground about 2 inches off the ground, and makes that play. And like I said, he had another interception in that game as well. He to me, is probably a second-round player. And I've heard some people maybe late first, but I think he's going to, when it's all said and done, Adderley is going to likely wind up in the second round, which is awesome for him coming from Delaware. And listen, if you can play, they'll find you. That's basically what I go by, and that's the case with him. Now, he didn't work out at the combine, obviously. He's 5'11 and a half, 206 pounds. He's got to do all that stuff at the Delaware Pro Day if he's able to. But from what I've seen on tape, I think he's an early day two guy.
Eric Smith is up, and then Brooke Pryor with the KC Star.
Hey, Todd. I noticed you had Ed Oliver to the Vikings at 18, and you mentioned the value there. What about his skill set makes him a top 10 talent?
You know, I look at him, and the first thing really is his quickness. All right. I mean, the reason I pause is because all the talk was with his size and what's he going to weigh in at, and if he weighs in heavier, is he going to move well? And I thought he answered some of those questions because he's not 6'1 or shorter. He's basically 6'2, 287 pounds. He does have shorter arms. You know, he's just under 32 inches. But when you look at what he was able to do, the 32 on the bench press, 36-inch vertical jump, which is very good, 10-foot broad jump, which is very good. You know, he did those things. Now, what I'm interested to see in Houston, I want to say it's the 28th for some reason, but when Houston has its pro day, does he dip back down to like 275 in order to run? Is he going to move around, or did he choose not to run because he wants to keep working on it and running his pro day? So we'll see with the agility stuff. But obviously by not running a 40 and your three cone, your shuttles, I'm not saying he's hiding anything, but he didn't. That's the one thing he didn't answer. So okay, he can bulk up now. Can he keep the weight on and go run? But what I see from him as a player is a guy that is exceptionally quick, has a lot of shock in his hands, is powerful. He's very tough to block one-on-one. You've got to double-team him a lot. Now, as a run defender, he's outstanding. He's a one-gap guy. But as a pass rusher, he's got to develop. He's still raw in terms of how he uses his hands and finishing, working the offensive lineman, the edges of an offensive lineman. He's got to improve in that area. Aaron Donald was a comparison a lot early on. The more tape I studied, and I went back and studied Donald at Pitt, he was far more advanced and a much better finisher as a pass rusher. So that's the area that he's got to improve. Now, 18 to me is a value pick for the Vikings there, or any team in that range. If you get a player who has potentially top 10 ability and is in fall because of some of his question marks and just because of how deep this class is, I think the Vikings or any team in that range would be really happy to get Ed Oliver close to 20 in this year's class.
Next up is Brooke Pryor with the KC Star.
Hey, Todd, you noted the Chiefs would be interested in a running back in the second or third round if they addressed the cornerback position in the first. What makes you think that they would go with that instead of another position like tight end?
I gave him a cornerback. So, I think running back is a possibility, but they have – it's tough because they have depth at that position. I just don't think they have the guy, if you will. They've got Damian Williams, Spencer Ware. He's going to come back as free agent. Daryl Williams as well, and then Charkandrick West. So, two of those four guys, West and Ware, are free agents. So, they've got to make a decision there. I think tight end would be a possibility in order to get depth, but I also think, when you look at it, they've got to attack the secondary. I think running back is something on day two that they could go after, but getting a corner, getting a safety, what are they going to do, in terms of some of their free agents up front in the defensive line, so that will help dictate it as well. So I could see them in the first two, maybe the two of their first three picks going defensive front and secondary. And then maybe you mix in a running back. And I think, while this class isn't great, I think there's some good value to unearth at the running back position and some of the later, third, fourth round range.
Okay, we'll go to the last question here. We just have a couple minutes. Tyler King with the Daily Collegian.
Curious what your opinion is of Penn State running back Miles Sanders. He's a guy that kind of impressed some people at the combine last week. I was curious if you think he could move his way into a day two conversation.
Sanders on tape, and when I saw him in person, really good back. I didn't think he was elite, first round type material, but I thought he was a day two prospect, and I think this workout only helps him. He's an instinctive runner. He's got some juice as a runner. He's got pretty good contact balance. Runs hard. He has potential to develop into a good pass protector and can catch the ball pretty adequately out of the backfield. So you mix that with the 4.49 in the 40, 20 on the bench press, which is really good. 4.49 at 211 pounds, 5'10.5" is always an outstanding time if you can get in the 4.4s as a running back, and he's got pretty solid size. The 36-inch vertical over 10-foot broad, 4.19 is awesome. As a short shuttle result, and his three cone was one of the best, if not, looking at it now, I think it was the best three cone of all the running backs. So it's tough to have a better workout than Sanders had, and I think if nothing else, it's going to lock him down a spot on day two, and he was probably in that range anyway, but I think this helps solidify it.
Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for today. However, more calls coming up, so please keep an eye out for those advisories. If you have any questions for me, feel free to follow up on email or phone. But thanks so much to all of you for your time today. Have a great rest of your day.